This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
The Power Hour.
That's right.
They've got multiple guests. Dana Evans is coming up. Jordan Cornette's coming up. Your phone calls if you're in the mood at 844, say ACCN. And that again, that bar bit. We'll go back to that before we get out of here. That one, that's got some more legs.
We got people also hitting us up on Twitter about ACC players. Scott Medlin, shout out to Martin Nestle from Duke, obscure ACC players. Mike Lester from Virginia Beach sends in Donald Hand.
Oh, Donald Hand.
Donald Hand, ACC legend who wore the Band-Aid on his forehead most of the year for luck after having to wear it earlier in the year. Anyway.
We'll get back to that.
That's pretty good, too. I like that topic. I mean, you start looking at this video, we're getting ready to show you something from, what, 22 years ago? 1998, is that right?
Yes. And, you know, you get the big rivalry coming up this weekend.
Sure.
With Duke and North Carolina. And on the surface, it looks like a complete mismatch the way these two are going.
Right now, right? Yep.
Today. But mm-hmm. I will just tell you, and I have no idea how this stuff's going to play out. I mean, Duke's going to be favored, needless to say. But, Wes, this series has been so unbelievably good
right.
and competitive that every time you think you're going to get one of those games, it doesn't happen often.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what?
Yeah.
You get a fist fight.
You get the capel shot from the midcourt stripe. You get all sorts of things. And Gene Wojciechowski, by the way, online, there's a unbelievable two-minute trailer just about the history of the game and the one that happened, obviously, 25 years ago that we talked about with Jeff Capel last week.
Right.
But you go back to 1995. It's a 1-2 game at Smith Center in Chapel Hill. 1998. It's a 1-2 game at Smith Center in Chapel Hill. Duke is number one in the country. And they come to Chapel Hill to meet Carolina, and it's the worst loss, third worst loss in a 1-2. There's Big Double O, Brendan Haywood, little Shamon Williams action. There's VC still balling. How unbelievable, by the way, is that?
That is crazy to think about,
yeah.
right?
And there's Shamon against Rashawn McCloud. Look at the players in this game. Just look at the guys on the floor. Antoine Jameson, by the way. 35 for the Tar Heels that night. Carter got up on the table. There's the ball game. Was Jameson open here? What's Wojo doing?
Getting ready to be on a poster.
There's Battier. Chris Carrawell now on the Duke bench. Maktar Jah? Come on, Pac. Got a little Maktar Jah video.
Now, I will tell you, Wes, this was an absolute beatdown. But this is not the snapshot of what this series is about.
No.
And I don't remember much about this game.
Because it wasn't close, right?
I am so used to, and I don't have a dog in the fight back then either.
Mm-hmm.
I was so used to, man, I don't care what the storyline is. Duke and North Carolina getting ready to play, and it didn't matter if it was at Cameron.
Right.
It didn't matter if it was over there at Smith Center. Get your popcorn and get ready to be entertained. Because
mm-hmm.
the games were unbelievably intense. They're going to be close. You know the coaches were going to go after each other. You knew the referees were going to be on edge. I mean, the environments are unbelievable. You've seen the stat 100 times already. The last 100 games, it's 50-50. And on top of that, just for fun, they've scored exactly the same amount of points. So to get a snapshot of a game like that in 98,
right,
in which number one got woodshedded by number two, that doesn't happen
yeah.
very often. Now, you can go back. I'm sure a Duke fan is going to say, Pac, you can go back to 2010 and we beat North Carolina by 30-something. Yeah, you can. But you know what? You have to go back to 2010. And that is not the norm of this series.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to give you more highlights as the week goes on, as it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. But I don't remember this game. Because it wasn't close.
Yeah. You remember the ones like Austin Rivers' shot.
Right.
The foul called late on Duke in the ballgame at Cameron where Brendan Haywood goes to the free throw line, wins the game.
Right. Hansbrough
winning four times at Cameron.
You got it. That's when you asked me, give me 10 seconds of Duke, North Carolina, I'm going to go that route.
How about the Duhon layup in Chapel Hill, right? The Duhon runaway layup to win the game in
right.
Chapel Hill.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, That, to me, is the essence of what makes this the best series in college sports. You heard me. In all of college sports, it's Duke and North Carolina basketball.
Yeah. No, it's phenomenal.
And there are great football rivalries. I'm sure there's great hockey rivalries. You can go on any list you want. But there is nothing more competitive than these two schools when they get together in hoops.
Yeah.
And even if you are a fan of somebody on the outside, you find yourself watching and picking a favorite. And it could change from a month. You may watch this game this weekend and go, you know what? I'm tired of Duke. I hope North Carolina gets, wherever you go. And a month from now, they're going to play again. Mm-hmm. You'll go the other way if you're on the outside. It's just compelling television when they get together.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you.
I don't remember this game. I'll be completely honest with you. I'm watching those highlights, I was like, you know what? I wrote the score down in 2010, Duke beat North Carolina 82-50 in Cameron. And I remember turning it off, going, that's not Duke Carolina, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Duke Carolina. Duke Carolina is high scoring, unbelievable intensity, and hey, it's coming down to the last shot. Who's got it? Who's going to make a play?
Or who gets a stop?
Yeah. Or who gets a stop?
Yeah. Saturday will be interesting because it's definitely been two different lines.
There's no doubt. And you know, when Robin, the Duke fan, called us the other day, remember, I ain't worried about that game. Well, you know what? You should worry about that game. But I do think Duke's lethargic approach last night, an effort until it mattered, and then he took care of business.
Oh, they'll be locked in by Saturday at 6.
They will be ready to go Saturday. And that might have been the worst thing that happened in North Carolina, was Duke kind of, BC outplayed us, out-hustled us.
Yeah.
And Duke just found a way at the end.
Yeah, Blue Devils end up winning last night 63-55. They outscored Boston College 42-31 in the second half.
But it was a 10-0 run, Wes, with 7 minutes to go, BC's up 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden Duke said, okay, forget it. Here we come. And they go on a 10-0 run, and Baker was out of sight coming off the bench, made the 3 for Duke. And again, I mentioned earlier, the two teams combined to go 3 of 33. Of 33 from 3.
There's Trey Jones. Missed shot. But then in the second half, Trey Jones got it fixed, and so did Duke, right? After all the missed shots in the first 20.
Well, Trey Jones really had to take some leadership here because Vernon Carey gets in foul trouble with his fourth foul with about 14 minutes to go in the game, and managed to stay away from number 5.
Yeah, and Javon Delaria had to come in and spell Carey once he got to foul trouble.
Yeah. But BC played well last night. BC played hard and had a chance to win that game last night.
By the way, for all the things that have been discussed about Duke depth, you can start to see, and I noticed this in looking at the box score last night, you can start to see where some of the strings are being pulled to narrow just a touch, maybe 10-8, if you will. Now, we're not going to go the traditional Duke 8-6, but I do believe you'll see maybe 8 once you get a little deeper in the season. And Jordan Cornett, who will join us bottom of the hour, he's the one that hatched the idea of Duke being 10 deep. But last night, you saw Delaurier with extended minutes because of Carey foul trouble.
Yep.
Elsewise, you know, just a sequence here and a sequence there might be all you get for Javon Delaurier.
And that's, you know, that was a trouble spot for Duke last night. Nobody's making an outside shot beyond the arc.
Mm-hmm.
Carey's in foul trouble. And it was like, okay, where is it coming from? I mean,
right.
You know, who's going to step up and make some plays? And Trey Jones last night showed great leadership down the stretch.
Well, and that's the thing that I think is perhaps his most valuable characteristic to Duke the rest of the way is that leadership. Because be honest, Mark, they've got talent everywhere else. He's talented too. But they've got to have that guy. The best Duke teams are the ones that have that guy, right?
Yep.
And he needs to be that guy for Coach K.
And he's, you know, and in this day and age of the one and dones, especially at Duke, to have a guy with some experience at the point is critical.
Right.
And he's going to eventually have to make shots like he did a year ago. And the people finally just said, hey, listen, dude, guess what? Mm-hmm. We'll give you a 16-footer. Can you make it?
Yep. By the way, BC is at Virginia Tech on Saturday, by the way. You'll see it on the
big game.
ACC NX. And
Hokies have lost 4 straight. Yeah. They have got to right the ship ASAP.
Carolina, of course, hosts Duke. Also in the league last night, Georgia Tech. Led early, led often.
I told you, I turned it off at 55-25.
Hey.
Up 30. Old Tech just wearing out New Tech.
Jose Alvarado, 20, 19 in the first half. Michael DeVoe, a dozen in his first game back after a foot injury. Jackets made this look easy, getting to 5-7 in the league.
There's the guitar player right there.
Yeah, man. Alvarado. By the way, got a note on Twitter earlier, Pack. Great note, by the way. Greg Clemens says if Dan Wells of NC State had been playing against Jose Alvarado in the early 70s.
Cuts that off.
He would have taken that air guitar and smashed it over his head.
But,
nothing like the old rough and tumble. Like the rough and tumble ACC of the 70s, right?
It was a little different then.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're going to play that act, you better have head on swivel. I mean, that only goes so far, especially when you're
night.
Especially when you're wearing somebody out. And last night, Georgia Tech looked pretty good now. They when they make shots and DeVoe being back, mm-hmm. and Alvarado again, we talked about their experience coming back with four starters from a year ago.
And they were defending.
And one of the few in the league that had that checked off.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech probably looks back at a couple other games just like Notre Dame would right now and go, man, woulda, coulda, shoulda. If we had a couple more wins here or there, it changes everything, whole perspective.
Hokies back home, we told you, host BC. And then Georgia Tech is at Pittsburgh, 2 o'clock on Saturday.
Glob special.
Man, I tell you, by the time we gather on Monday.
It's a big pit week. Think about it.
Yeah. Tonight and then Saturday?
Pitt's looking at Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. And if they have the 2-0 week, mm-hmm. where do they bounce up in accounting? 5?
They might make
6?
A move, Coach.
I think they definitely do.
The other one that you get an idea of here is when you start thinking about where Georgia Tech is, at Pittsburgh, Louisville at home, at Wake, at Syracuse, 3 of the next 4 on the road?
Well, what doesn't sound good about that is Louisville.
I understand.
Syracuse on the road. Good luck. Play hard.
Yep.
But they played well last night. I know that much.
Yep.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Jordan Cornett coming up here in about 15 minutes. But we're going to be joined by Dana Evans, who's having a great year, and so are the Louisville Cards again. No surprise there.
Right.
Got to go. There must be something in the water in Louisville right now.
Whew.
Men and women are really rocking and rolling in the
Absolutely.
ACC. Both of them.
Yeah. Great to have Dana with us. First of all, congratulations on the season so far. Coach Walls has been with us a couple times. Are you as pleased as he is with the way things have gone?
I am. Thank you. We're doing really good this year. We have a really solid team.
Now, before we get into the ACC, I'm going to go backwards with you a little bit, Dana. What was it like this weekend when Team USA comes rolling into Louisville and you saw, that's a pretty good-looking club that we got to play? And again, I know it was an exhibition, but it had to be a great deal of fun to participate.
Yes, it was a great experience. Just being around your role models, asking them questions that you've always wanted to ask them, and just stepping on the court with Sue Bird was always like a dream of mine. So it was pretty cool.
So as a follow up to that, was the intensity, or was it like a chill pickup game? I mean, walk us through an exhibition game in the middle of the season like this when you're taking on basically the best of the best.
It was a lot of intensity. They played really hard. Their defense was really good. They were smothering. They got out and ran against us. Their transition was really good, too. We learned a lot from them.
What did you learn individually from that?
I learned as a point guard, you got to find an open man and get yours. You got to find a balance. That's what Sue Bird did. She only played about 16 minutes, but she contributed a lot, whether that was making 3 threes or getting her post the ball when they needed it.
You know, Dana, it's interesting. When games like that occur, sometimes it happens in the summer and it's not as public, maybe, as this tour has been for the national team. A few minutes of the UConn game a week or so ago, a few minutes of your game over the weekend. I can only imagine that sometimes when this happens, it's like a pickup game in a gym type deal, right? Now you're doing this out in front of, in y'all's case, 15,000, 16,000 people at the Yum Center. Does that almost add another layer to it as a player?
It did. Yeah. I was very nervous at first, but then after the first 2 minutes, it was fine. I just told them we just needed to see the ball go in. And after that, we were rolling. We had a really good first quarter.
I want to ask you, Coach Walls was with us, and when we were talking about it last week, he said it's really important for our team. He said this a very unique experience to start with. He said it's important for everybody on our team to participate in this game. He goes, he feels strongly about it. Did you feel strongly that it was important for everybody to understand what that moment was going to be like?
Yes, I think it was important for everybody to get a chance to step on the floor with the best of the best. That's an experience that you'll remember for the rest of your life. I think everybody deserved it. We all put the time in and the work in. And Coach Walls is a really good coach to let everybody participate and be able to play against the Skylar Diggins and Sue Birds.
I mentioned this before we brought you on the show. The men's team, top of the league. Women's team, top of the league. What kind of conversations, if any, do you have, I don't know, maybe during the course of the week, campus-wide, you have same classes or whatever the case may be, where it's like, hey, you know what? We got it going on right now at Louisville.
Well, I have Darius in one of my classes, my SPAD classes, and we kind of talk about how this program is doing really good, and we just got to keep it up.
Yeah, well, there's no question about that, and you get unbelievable fan support. We know that for the games at the Yum Center. Louisville, game in, game out, men's or women's, has some of the best crowds in all of college basketball. We mentioned Coach Walls, Dana. We see the intensity. We see the success. But he seems to be a player's coach. I mean, somebody you can really, really lay it on the line for.
Yes, he's a really good person, too. Like, if anything's going on, that's somebody you know you can go to and talk to about stuff. And he's a tough coach, but that's what I ask for because I want to be great and I want to be pushed. So he definitely pushes me every day.
Hey, Dana, yesterday, Ryan McMahon's on the show, okay? And he starts bragging that he's the best singer on the team. Two-part question. Number one, have you ever heard him sing? And number two, who's the best on the ladies' side?
I've never heard him sing. But, well, that's crazy that you asked that because yesterday we had a talent show. And Naya Green and Narika Kono, the two freshmen, did like a duo. And they got third place. And they sang and they did really, really good.
Whoa, really? Talent show now. Hang on.
So what other talents did we have on that?
What else was on the stage yesterday?
It was a lot of different talents. The swimming team, the men's swimming team did like a singing thing and they had like the piano. They had a guitar. It was a lot of different talents, a lot of singing, a lot of dancing. It was really cool.
So this was all the teams involved in Louisville Athletics that got involved in this talent show?
Yes.
And who was the overall winner? Do you remember?
Ryan. He sang and he did the guitar. He did a Luke Combs song. I can't think of the name of it. But he did really good.
Ryan McMahon?
He's on the track team. Ryan
on the track team. Okay. Ryan on the track team. All right. We've got to figure that out now. We have to find out who that is, Pac.
Well,
we can't skate by a lot of that.
Ryan
now.
Yesterday was bragging about some Drake tune he was working on. I said, "Well, let me hear a little bit of it." He said, "No, I can't do that for you." So he all of a sudden he got, I don't know if it was the bigness of the stage. I don't know what happened there, but I was kind of hoping he was going to give us something, but he's going to have to wait for the next go around.
Yeah, maybe so. All right. You get Florida State.
Nervous.
You get Florida State this weekend. Every game I know is big. Coach Walls tells us that all the time when we visit with him. In your mind, what changes in conference play? You guys come off this, scenario where you play Team USA. Now all of a sudden you jump right back into the ACC against a team that may not be having the kind of year they thought they were going to have, but they've got talented players and obviously an excellent coach.
Well, with Florida State, we have to play our game. They're physical. They have a lot of talented players, and they are well coached. So we have to make sure we stick to the game plan and we play hard and play tough.
What's the best thing your team does, Dana? I mean, we see the ball movement, we see the shooting, things like that. But against a team like Florida State, what will be the most important aspect of that contest tomorrow night here on ACC Network?
I would say handling adversity. When things don't go well, we got to make sure we keep it together. And I think that's another thing that we learned from Team USA. When we got up on them in the first quarter, you couldn't tell. It didn't faze them, and they stayed together. So handling adversity, because they're going to make tough shots. They have talented players.
All right, I ask this question to every student-athlete. I'm putting you on the spot, Dana. The hardest class you've had at Louisville is what?
The hardest class is biology, for sure.
I can relate to that. I didn't like biology in college either. Didn't like it
at all.
It's
tough.
Yeah. Was it recent or was it earlier?
It was early. It was my freshman year.
Mm-hmm. By the way, have you had any Spanish classes at Louisville?
I haven't had any Spanish classes, thank God.
Don't take them. We've had too many Louisville student athletes that have said Spanish. So I was relieved when you went biology on it. Because if you would have said Spanish, I'd have said, you know what? We got to do an investigation of what's going on at Louisville, that Spanish department.
Hey, Dana, we wish you a lot of luck. This was awesome. Appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way. It's been fun watching you guys play.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Dana Evans, Gary, Indiana, one of the ACC's top players.
Averaging 18 points, 2.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. She is a player.
Yep, and she's part of the Thursday night doubleheader here on ACC Network. Comes up tomorrow night. We get started with Duke, Carolina. Game at Cameron, 6 o'clock. Jen Hildreth, LaChana Robinson will be in the crow's nest for that. Then number 17, Florida State. Kai Gillespie was with us last week. Yep. They visit Louisville, 8 o'clock. Pam Ward, Debbie Antonelli will be at the KFC Yum Center right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back on this program, we're going to show Cassia Stanley again.
Oh, we should do it every day.
We should show it every hour on the hour.
Yep.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Chester's chilling, so is Fuller, Otto. Got Ryan filling in for Robert today, doing a great job. And again, the cast of thousands up in Bristol who always make it happen. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number, but here in the Power Hour, we are not done with guests.
Nope.
That includes a gentleman that's going to be talking some hoops and obviously some football later on with National Signing Day Part 2. Our man Jordan Cornett joins us. Jordan, good morning. How are you?
What's up, fellas? Pack Durham, how we feeling this morning?
About a 5 on a 10.
Packer's under the weather, right, JC?
I do know that, but I know my man fights through.
I mean, we played hard. I mean, come on, man. Put some dirt on it, some brown water, and some this codeine syrup stuff they gave me yesterday. Man, we can do all kinds of cool stuff. Good to go.
The hardest working men in the business. Ain't nothing holding you guys back.
Right, so we just get to work, man. Roll up your sleeves and let's go. All right, last night.
If I get sick, Cornette, I just want to tell you one thing. If I get sick, I'm checking out. Somebody going to have to fill this spot.
Come on, man. Ain't nothing but a thing.
There you go. We got this. Can we do the whole interview like that?
If you want.
Be huge.
All right, I'm not going to do this. But you know why? Because my glasses fog up. All right, last night, Duke. As Coach K said, hey, man, listen to me. You better come to play and quit worrying about North Carolina over the weekend. They about got caught. BC played well last night, good enough to win the game. They had that 3-point lead about 7 minutes to go to that 10-0 Duke run. But BC played hard, but Duke found a way to win again. That's what good teams seem to do.
Yeah, I mean, look, ultimately at the end of the day, Pack, this is a road win in a conference. I know it's against a BC team that's no world beater. But without a doubt, you could tell, especially out of the gates when BC took an early lead off a surge, that Duke was thinking about Saturday. And that's typical for 18- to 22-year-old kids, despite the fact they have a legend on the sidelines who said postgame, I kept telling our guys to listen to me. You can lose a game like this if you look ahead. I think they did. But ultimately, what came to the forefront was Trey Jones again and his ability to make plays, take the reins, and lead this team to victory. Something that stands out of concern to me for a Duke team that I'm so high on is when they don't make shots, like they struggle beyond the arc so mightily last night, how can you win games? Coupled with the fact that they don't have a true alpha go-get-me-a-basket dog. Yes, Trey Jones made those plays down the stretch, but they lack a Jordan Warren type that can say, oh, everything breaks down, I'll go take care of us. That could be problematic moving forward in those one-and-done scenarios that inevitably come with the tournament.
All right. Is not Vernon Carey that guy, though, Jordan? Isn't he the guy that you're going to give the rock to on the block, down one, under four to go in an NCAA tournament or tight regular season ACC game?
You would hope so. And I think that's what we're talking about with their perimeter. I think, to me, this guy, you could argue, is that National Player of the Year with what he's doing. But you have to make a concerted effort to get it to a big man. A big man must be established, and that's on the other four guys on the floor. Duke more times than not does do that, but at the end of this game, it was Trey Jones. Vernon Carey is going to have to be that every game moving forward. And clearly he has the talent to be, but as a big man, a lot of that is within the control of your perimeter players.
All right, we just had John Mooney on this show, and I'm going to let you stump for 5 seconds or maybe 30 seconds on the value of John Mooney and why he is underappreciated nationally.
Do you see him on any award list?
Nope.
Is he on a top 20 Naismith Award watch winners? Is he on
those
lists?
Nope.
Can somebody tell me why he's not on that list?
Nope.
This guy goes out there and is the second leading rebounder in the country, grabbing more than 13 boards per game, is a walking bucket as well. It's clearly disrespect to the Notre Dame basketball team. And I understand why that disrespect is there. This team's not a tournament team right now. They've underachieved. But there has not been a minute this season when John Mooney has stepped on the floor where he has underachieved. He produces. He is workmanlike. He is a leader for this team. And despite the struggles, he comes out there and competes. Let the highlights speak for themselves. This guy generates offense by pure effort. He's not the most athletic. He's not the most talented. But he plays with an edge and is wildly productive. And when Coach Jim Boeheim says, I don't know why this guy doesn't get the respect he deserves, it's a joke, I think you should probably listen to the legend in Jim Boeheim. It's unbelievable. He's the Rodney Dangerfield of college basketball. He truly gets no respect.
By the way, how important is that game tonight for both of those teams, Pittsburgh and Notre Dame?
I think we'd have to lean, though, and say it's more important for Pitt because of the run they think can potentially go on, playing, I think, three or four games before they get to an opportunity versus Florida State. Pitt is more primed for a postseason run here. Notre Dame has incredible work to do. I know Coach Bray's telling that Irish team, keep your head down and simply go play and don't worry about that stuff. Whereas I feel like Pitt, they're starting to generate some momentum and have you talking like, hey, if they can get some stuff done here down the stretch, you could blink. They could be 9-6 in the conference. And then you're thinking, why not Pitt in the tournament? So to me, it sticks out more for Pitt, where I think Notre Dame just head down and play.
All right, Jordan, what about Virginia tonight? Cavaliers host Clemson, had a week off since the win against Florida State. They were winners last weekend, didn't even put a uniform on. Is this a team that you got penciled in as the fourth best team in the league? Are they the favorites for the double bye?
Syracuse has taken a dip with their loss to Clemson and obviously their loss to Duke, which I think everybody expected the Duke loss. But with Virginia taking that week off, you're right. They kind of propelled themselves into that four slot. Right now, I'd say this is a tournament team. They lean on that defense clearly. It's a team that is so bad offensively, as we've seen. But they've generated a little bit of life with Wilton Tensai's ability to stretch you out by consistently knocking down that three-point shot. That allows Diakite more operating room. That allows Braxton Key to cut. Kihei Clark has been better with his decision-making. The pieces are in place with proven champions here. This is a game where you beat Clemson, you take a sigh of relief and say, we didn't hurt ourselves here, let's continue to move forward and work. But this could be one of those pitfall games where it's like, we liked Virginia, and then they couldn't get it done.
All right, so three are in today. Lenardi has one hanging around on whichever side of the bubble you want to buy into. How many you think get in the tournament?
I'm going to say five. I think Virginia's going to get in, and I think then it becomes a Syracuse, Pitt. I don't know if NC State has anything in them to do something special here, but I think when you look at those other two, like a Pitt or Syracuse coupled with a Virginia, I think there's a realistic shot that there's five.
All right, speaking of NC State, they have Miami tonight, and to me it's a really – flip a coin kind of game. And if NC State's going to make a run, it's got to start tonight. down in South Beach, doesn't it?
Yeah, they've got to be better with the basketball for certain. This is a team that has been giving it away. C.J. Bryce has disappeared but showed some signs of life. They've got to knock down shots, and I feel like so many teams in the conference, we talk about that, but it's a domino effect once they can start to do that. They've got to play with a pace that has been so beneficial to them over the years. They got to play fast, but it starts with getting stops and being able to run. But their lack of value of the basketball has absolutely hurt them here as of late. They've got pieces. They've got potential. They've got versatility, and they do have some depth. I've been really enjoying DJ Funderburk and what he's brought to this team. I just think a collaborative effort and a more disciplined effort can take the Wolfpack very far.
By the way, when the committee announces this week the top 16 seeds for the NCAA tournament, just a little teaser, what do you think we're going to get with Florida State and Duke and Louisville? Where do you think they'll be seeded?
I don't think we're going to see a one seed early on here. I think that they'll probably all be floating in that 4-9 slot. One seed meaning a 1-4 spot. I think you'll probably see them all in that 4-9 position, 4-10 position, which still says to me that they're in good spot for a couple two seeds and a 3 seed, which is great. And I think they still have a position to play into 1 seeds, all 3 of those teams, depending on how they distance themselves in conference. But I think now you're probably looking at a pair of 2 seeds and a 3 seed.
There you go. Now we're talking.
That's what you said yesterday.
That's what I said. He's right on, good line of thinking.
But I think, Wes, there's great potential in Pac as well. I think there's great potential for one of them to sneak up, or maybe even 2 of them, depending on how they play down the stretch, to get to that 1 line.
I think, and I told Pac this yesterday, I think what ends up happening is going to be the San Diego State-Gonzaga deal is going to be very interesting, because one of those teams, I don't think it'll be Gonzaga because I think it's 1-2 with Baylor, but I think San Diego State ends up potentially running the table, and they come east, and they're going to get one of those teams as a 2 in that same bracket, and that'll be unbelievable. I mean, you're talking about Duke, Louisville, Florida State, any of them, doesn't matter. Whichever one is the 2 opposite San Diego State, because, you know, the S-curve deal they go through, Pac, I think that 2 seed will then all of a sudden become like a Sunday night favorite on the selection shows, because nobody will want to buy San Diego State, no matter what Farnham tells us, Jordan. We're not going to buy San Diego State nationally. And here's
those
the deal,
left
Pac.
Coast guys.
That two is going to become a factor. That 2 will automatically become a factor in the way we look at the bracket.
I also think it's going to be difficult for the ACC, even in a perfect case scenario, to get 2 ones. I think you can get 1, but the big 3 are just so much better right now than everybody else in the conference that eventually, you know, I just don't see somebody, I don't see 2 of them winning everything, because you can't.
Right.
You can't.
Yeah, and I point to last year, I believe we had 2 1-seeds come out of this conference, but it was a different 3 conference last year.
Yeah, 3 1-seeds.
Excuse me.
Yeah,
exactly. It was a different conference naturally last year. I think you're right. The ability to not grab the wins that would be in front of them that are typically available in this conference probably does hurt the ability to get 2. But I'll tell you what, you have 3 legitimate Final Four contenders in this conference, and also the reigning champion in Virginia, who I don't have that much postseason confidence in. But for all this talk that it's been such a down year in the conference, maybe the depth has been lacking, but you still have a reason to believe 3 teams can get to Atlanta. I'd say that's a pretty good measuring stick for what your conference is this year.
All right, you're going to swap out. You're going to swap out Tallahassee on Saturday at noon. You and Dave O'Brien, I guess, will be at Tucker Center for Miami and Florida State. But here tonight at 5:30 on ACC Network, you're going to officiate, and I use the word officiate, the signing day show with Eric McLean, E.J. Manuel, Tom Luganbill, and also Coach Rick. The current ACC recruiting rankings as we head into signing day part 2 is they've got 10 teams in the top 50 here, Jordan. I mean, Pac said there are only, 26 players of the ESPN top 300 left to sign. I don't know who's going to get a lot better. But if the ACC lands the balance of some of these, it could be a pretty handsome afternoon here for you guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at 4 of our teams in the top 20 with their recruiting classes. And I really look at what Mac Brown's done in North Carolina, which sticks out a lot to me. We remember what those Mac Brown defenses, you guys more than anybody, when Mac was there last. And now he's loading up on DNs. He's got the number 2 DN, the number 2 overall recruit in the nation who's a defensive end. He's going to bring that defense back to what it's historically been when he was on those sidelines, coupled with Sam Howell. That'll be a lot of fun to watch. And then Clemson, the rich get richer with that recruiting class. The other ones that stick out to me, though, you know, Miami and Florida State coming right back into this thing in terms of pegging top 20 classes. So, I mean, you look at that graphic, there's reason to believe that the ACC is going to have a bounce back year with the talent they're starting to bring back in and rebuild.
Well, let's hope so, right? I mean, I'm not worried about the Tigers, but I am worried about everybody else stepping their game up, which needs to happen.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, I mean, but like even like the Jeff Collins, Georgia Tech crew, that the class that he brings in, I mean, to bring in a number five quarterback and Jeff Sims, start to get kind of guys that he wants in there. There's reason to believe that these teams are going to start to improve markedly because of the guys on the sidelines, because of the type of proven recruiters they are. And there's a lot of programs that are being flipped. So guys were on in-between years last year or on that in-between year this year, but can come in there and make things happen. And look at Norvell with Memphis. He never had a top 60 class in his 4 years. So despite the fact that they don't have a remarkable class, although a good one, he'll be able to do a lot with that in terms of just being a coach on the sidelines and how he improves the program.
By the way, I know it's going to look good from a fashion standpoint tonight on that desk, because I know Manuel, that's big time. First round money is Robbie
Jones. First round money.
Yeah, it's first round money. But let me tell you this, Tom Luganbill is going to have the best shoes there. Luganbill is going to have the best pair of shoes you've ever seen, because they're not going to be shoes. He's going to wear boots. And his boots will be better looking than anybody else's gear.
Well, here's the other thing. The fact that Cornette's showing up, unshaven, sweatshirt, tells me that, you know what, I'm going to throw a little bone to the boys in the morning, but I'm going to be looking like $1 million by 5:30 this afternoon.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about, Pac. That's how we do it. You got to lull them to sleep, then you hit them in the head, and then you're strumming a guitar like Alvarado.
That's it.
Yeah, by the way, real quick here before we go to break, and we touched on this in the break, if Alvarado hit the air guitar on Jordan Cornette after he knocked down a three, how would that go going back down the floor?
We're getting a people's elbow. People's elbow.
People's elbow.
I don't condone violence, everybody. It'd be a playful one.
All right. Be good, my man. See you soon.
Love you guys, man. All have a good rest of the
Jordan
show.
Jordan Cornette, he's the man.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
We do have some tidbits to go through, though, before we get out of here tonight.
Can I tell you that Twitter has taken a flutter, if you will.
Twitter's taken a flutter?
You like
that?
You just said? Yeah, ACC players from 2000. Chris Hooks hits me with Kenny Ainge.
Oh, yeah.
NC State. That's a good one. By the way, Ellen, who watches this show apparently on a regular basis, bless her heart, very kind comment. Don't know if they're better ambassadors for the University of Louisville and the city than Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
No kidding.
Keys to the city? Question mark.
Well, I mean, we are still working feverishly.
Yeah.
No pun intended. To get this show to the Derby.
Yeah.
Because that was an idea that was hatched on this program.
It was.
Not long ago.
Mid-sentence.
A lot of folks said they got no chance of pulling this off. Right, Wes?
That's true. I'm one of them. By the way, we've had fun with this flashback today on players. Just a quick check of who we've kind of talked about here. I know we mentioned your favorite, because you grew up a State fan, so you immediately.
I was an NC State fan as a kid.
Glenn Sudhop
is the first name that
popped in my head.
Chubby Wells at Clemson was my number two guy.
Oh, Chubby Wells, that'd be a good one. There's Glenn Sudhop with Craig Davis. Obscure ACC players. I went Kenny Matthews, by the way, also of NC State. I thought about going Obina Akizi from Maryland.
Wow.
But Kenny Matthews is the one. And Brian Magid, by the way, was also another obscure ACC player.
Well, my favorite.
Colin Abraham of Clemson falls in that category. Ernie, Lee Goza, Georgia Tech.
Ernie Disco Graham. Was one of my all-timers. He would light it up and be – He'd go for 90 if you give him enough shots. He'd take a few.
Ernie Disco Graham?
Ernie Disco Graham, maybe.
I'm telling you, we need to have the all Top Gun team. We talked about doing that on the old radio show.
Yeah.
I think I've got my notes at some point for percentage of field goals attempted.
You were working hard on that.
Man, I had some numbers.
Wes Duramath was heavy at work.
Yeah, we were doing some work on that.
By the way, speaking of numbers, completely offbeat, can I just say something?
Cole Anthony would be close to this year's team. Ratio per games played, shot attempts.
Cole Anthony against teams with a pulse would be scary. Scary.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
I couldn't help but notice last night while Georgia Tech was up 30 on the Hokies and BC was pushing Duke around to the limits here, I saw the scroll pop up last night that the beloved Hornets were beating up on the Rockets. Just bear with me a second. The codeine.
The Hornets who've won one home game since we last saw them.
I'm going to give you some Western math here in a second. So the codeine kicks in. I don't see how the thing ends. And I noticed this morning that they lost.
Yeah, they did.
Wes.
What?
Since we went to the Hornets game.
Sacramento.
Right. Feet on floor.
December 17th?
Correct.
Yeah.
Since that win.
Coming up on 2 months.
Our beloved NBA team is 3-18. 3-18. One of those is a home win. That's it.
Josh, Drew.
3-18.
I'm going to pose this question to you as innocent bystanders in this whole operation. Do you believe in the Packer and Durham feet on the floor curse?
100%. I mean, Pack hasn't been healthy yet.
Since
you went to the Hornets game. He's sick. The Hornets are sick. Australia caught on fire. The entire Eastern Hemisphere has the flu.
And Clemson lost a football game for the first time in 2 years.
That's right. And it's all your fault.
Oh.
Drew?
Well, I mean, Clemson's still undefeated in Chapel Hill since 2019, so can't be that bad.
Well, the men's team is. The women's team lost here the other day, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, okay.
3-18. They're getting it done, aren't they? And they won't invite us back?
The real question is, which coach is going to put you on the floor in Greensboro?
Oh, there are no floor seats in Greensboro. Not those kind of floor seats. You can sit at a table in the end zone with the right media credential. Are you going to go to games in Greensboro, by the way?
Of course. Well, assuming I ever get healthy enough to have a voice for 3 hours on radio, we will do off campus from Greensboro.
Really?
Yes.
In the Coliseum or somewhere else?
That I don't know. SiriusXM is working on that as we speak. So we'll do our dog and pony in Greensboro.
We're excited, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know that we can officially say this, but we'll just tell y'all just for being, you know. We're going to do the show from Greensboro at the tournament.
Yeah, men's and women's.
Yeah, we're going to do one day of the women's tournament, looks like. Friday, I think.
That's what I've been told.
And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we'll be from somewhere in Greensboro. Hopefully it'll be a place people can come by and visit and that kind of thing. And
maybe Stimmy's Barbecue. That'd be a good spot.
Cross the street. 7 in the morning.
7 a.m. The smell of pork rinds. Talking hoops.
Unbelievable.
Cold beverage in your hand at 7
and we're working on, and by the way, we're working on making the shows fun, bringing some people by that have had success in the tournament. People have seen the tournament. Greensboro is a special place, by the way, for the tournament.
What
always has.
Glenn Sudhop showed up.
That'd be awesome.
Would be awesome, right?
I would love, and here we go, quiet production meeting in the last 90 seconds. I'd love to be able to find guys who played in the ACC tournament in the 70s and 80s in Greensboro.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Be great.
I mean, you know, you think about it, if we could get, you know, guys like a Dudley Bradley, John Kuster from Carolina, who both won case awards in Greensboro, Randolph Childress. So we can find a way to get Randolph Childress on the show.
Jim Spanarkle.
Well, he's doing the Nets with Iron Eagle.
He'd rather be down in Greensboro.
Sarah Kustock.
Anybody want to do the Nets? Kidding?
Better than Charlotte.
Doing the Hornets.
But we're hoping to have a lot of fun in Greensboro. By the way, basketball tonight, 4 games on the schedule.
Oh, Mike Jaminski.
Pitt at Notre Dame, Clemson at Virginia. G-Man played in the 78 ACC tournament in Greensboro.
Sure. No doubt.
NC State, Miami, Wake, and Louisville all across the board tonight in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So we're looking forward to seeing those two of them are here.
A lot of glob action tonight. That Pitt Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
It's going to get no national play. It's one of those kind of games, right? That's why the glob's the glob. But yeah. Within the league, it is a really important game. Somebody can get hot this week.
Brett Friedlander, who covers NC State for Sports Illustrated website, says Nikki Booker Brown has made it official. He's now signed with NC State. So that means that NC State's already in the pool on this second signing day. Don't forget, 5:30. Jordan Cornette hosts the signing day edition of the Huddle, and that's followed by a basketball doubleheader. 5:30 tonight. Don't forget Jeff Hafley, Dabo Swinney, Manny Diaz, Pat Narduzzi, all expected to join the fellows tonight.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.